Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium.
Super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake. Mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Welcome to 42nd Street Pete's Grindhouse, and tonight is a very special grindhouse because this past Valentine's Day, our hearts were broken because on that day, we lost a true legend, a friend, and a mentor, David Friedman. If you looked up the term stand-up guy in a dictionary, Dave's picture would be there. Dave meant so much to so many of us. Some of us called him the Colonel, to others he was Uncle Dave. To his legion of fans, he was an icon, a gregarious man who would greet you with a smile, and that if you had met him before, odds are he remembered something about you that you had probably forgotten. I met Dave in the early convention days when he and Herschel Gordon Lewis had been rediscovered by a new legion of fans. We became friends, and I learned a lot from that friendship. We'd see each other every October at a convention, and when he stopped attending that show, we still stayed in touch. One of my most cherished moments was when he came to Cinema Wasteland and agreed to be on my Grindhouse panel. Dave was the guy the fans really came to hear. Dave loved life and wouldn't have wanted us to be sad at his leaving us. I'm sure he's holding court right now with his old friends Dan Soni, Shelley Wilson, Jamie Gillis, and the rest of the 40 Thieves. So tonight we celebrate his legacy with some very special guests. And let me welcome to the show Herschel Gordon Lewis. Welcome to the show, Herschel.
Thank you. I am truly honored to be here. And to this moment, I'm saddened by losing Dave altogether.
It is a sad day, but I don't think Dave would want us to be sad.
He would want us to celebrate his life, which certainly is worthy of celebration. And as you folks know, to me, he wasn't a legend. He was my partner. And so I had the opportunity, which a lot of people never get in later years, to not only observe him close up, but to admire him close up. And I can tell you that the two of us click like the components of a fine watch. I brought something to the union. He brought something to the union. Each, we felt, was unique. And those are days that are regrettably gone. He was really the last of a breed of what we today would call, he was a showman. And you don't find those anymore. People are tied up with email and so on, and their personalities are buried. Dave never buried his personality. And meeting Dave Friedman for the first time, people always were overcome not only by his enthusiasm for life, but by the way he knew exactly what hot buttons to push to get people to work with him. And I will never forget the episodes that we had in our early movies where we were unknown, shooting unknown stuff that most people would object to automatically. But if somebody showed up to object, they would wind up having them as extras in the picture. It was certainly an enlightening experience for me, and I truly feel honored to have been that much involved with a guy who was one of a kind. Am I talking too much?
No, you're right on, and you're absolutely right. I had the pleasure of meeting Dave, and he gave me he talked to him for like 20 minutes about how much your work influenced me, Herschel. And as you know, we've talked on my show in the past, Night Watch, and we've talked several times about the influence you had on me and on several of us that really absolutely love your work and your work with Dave. And I got to talk to him at the same convention that Pete was talking about earlier, and he turned around and handed me a Blood Feast book, and he had signed it up and everything for me under the table there while we were talking as a surprise, and he handed it to me and said, "Well, hope this helps you remember even better." And I was so shocked by that because you know, it's not every day someone, you know, will do something like that for you, and I just was really thrilled that he did that for me, and you know, he was so open to talk to everybody, and I think it kind of took him by surprise a little bit how many of us really admired what both of you had done.
Well, it surprised us, because certainly when we made Blood Feast, we had no notion that we were starting a trend. All we knew was we wanted to take a shot, spending as little money as possible, because it was our own money. We didn't have a main office to call and say, "Well, we better get another couple of $1 million or we can't finish this picture." Every dollar counted. And if it weren't for the techniques that Dave used to maximize the use of those dollars, Blood Feast never would have been made at all. Aside from which, there never was anyone in the history of motion picture who had a better command of campaigns. If they had an Academy Award for campaigns, Dave would have won it every time.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
I agree, too.
And speaking of Blood Feast, we also have with us Frank Hennenlotter, who basically his first film, Basket Case, was dedicated to Blood Feast, if I remember right. Welcome to the show,
Frank. It was dedicated to Herschel.
To Herschel, okay.
Yes.
Okay, so you're brain damaged. I'm not going to apologize for that.
Which was the name of my second film.
That's right.
Well, Frank, you worked a lot with Dave during the Something Weird bonanza when you guys unearthed all those great films and stuff.
Well, Dave was very much a pillar of Something Weird Video. We couldn't have did what we did without him. It was Mike Rainey had a phrase he would always use: "Is that all roads lead to Dave?" And when we would be pursuing a film or trying to get the rights to something, once they heard that Dave was involved with the company, we could have it. He was like the seal of approval for everybody in the business. And he loved what we were doing. He for the past 20 years, he still could not believe we were selling his films. I mean, he would just shake his head in disbelief. And he often said to us, he says, "Either you guys are geniuses or the greatest con artists in the world." And I, you know, I just absolutely adored the man. He was like, he had the persona of a carny, but he had the most encyclopedic knowledge of film of almost anyone I've ever met.
That is so. He also had heart.
Oh, God, did he?
A lot of people in the film business don't have.
Yeah. You know, and he was, you know, we worked with him this past year at the beginning of it, which was a very terrible year for Dave. And the last time we saw him, that Mike Rainey and I went down there, I think everybody knew it was going to be the last time we were going to see him. And we all just pretended otherwise. But despite his failing health, his mind was razor sharp. We sat him down to do an interview on Sunday about sexploitation in the 60s. And we were hoping, given his frail health, given everything else, we were hoping if we could get a couple of minutes of usable footage. He talked for almost 5 solid hours. He would not stop. We didn't ask him questions. He was on his own. He was just like a motor, just going and going and going. He summed up everything we could have wanted to know about sexploitation, plus some. He was just incredible. It was also wonderful being in Anniston with him, because everywhere we went, everybody knew him. Didn't matter what restaurant we were going in. "Hey, Dave, how you doing? Oh, here, come. Here's the best table." It was like he was a traveling carnival in real life. An incredible, incredible man.
He actually did have a carnival for a while, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah, he did, yeah. That's what he did. Wait a minute. That's what he did when he retired.
He ran the Calhoun County Fair.
He bought a carnival.
We also have his niece Micah with us tonight, and Ken Keish, promoter of Cinema Wasteland. Micah, anything you'd like to say? Because I know you said you're going to be sitting in his office tonight.
I am sitting in Dave's office tonight. It's one of my favorite places in his home. He was so generous as to leave me his estate to carry on, and I've moved my family into his home, and we've made it our home as he wanted. but I've refused to touch anything in his office. His office is his office, and anytime anybody comes up here to visit or check in for any reason, they're going to always come to Dave's office and be able to sit and look at not only Carnival, but movie memorabilia as well, and it just gives me a peace of mind to sit in his office and carry on his estate the way he had it, and I love Dave very much, and there were so many things I wanted to comment on as Herschel was speaking and Frank was speaking, and I think the main thing that is Dave did have heart, and a lot of it came from his background with the Carnival. The first rule of the Carnival is you take some and you leave some, and Dave was a firm believer in that. You take some and you leave some. It's important to do that. I'm teaching my child that same principle for life as well. There were so many things that Dave taught me, not only as a family member, but as a mentor. He taught me how to run a business, be a good person. I'm torn when I get to talk about Dave. Do I talk about Dave as a family member, or do I talk about him as everybody knows, you know, as a businessman, as a movie maker? I'm torn sometimes.
Well, it's a little bit of both, because he was basically family to all of us here. You know, he was yeah. Uncle Dave.
Mike, right. I'm grateful to be on another level, because I remember when Dave no longer could drive, his eyesight had gone too far. You would drive him to Florida so we could get together maybe once or twice a year. And those are days that Margo and I both treasure.
Absolutely. I enjoyed being whatever I could for Dave, whether that was a bookkeeper, a chauffeur, a good-looking date, whatever he needed, I tried to get for him.
Really, really wanted to get him out to Cinema Wasteland one last time to hook him up with Herschel, but unfortunately it wasn't meant to be. But we did get him out the one time, and it was a blast.
Always a blast.
Yeah, well, you can ask Micah. She'll remember that time as much as anyone. And I would talk to Dave after he came to my show, and I can go back a little further, that I invited him forever, but every October he was running the fair. In the spring he would have other things to do, and sometimes the amusement park show in Cleveland would coincide around my date, and we would hook up for lunch when he was in Cleveland. But finally, when his eyesight started going bad, and he had to quit running the fair, he used to just tell me when I approached him, "Thank God you look like Sasquatch or Bigfoot, Ken, because I'll recognize you even half blind." But it took that long for him to take the invitation to come to the show, and I would talk to him, or Pete would talk to him later, and he'd get excited going, you know, ask him how he's doing. "Oh, I just did this show in Cleveland." "Oh, it was your show." You know, when I was talking to him. So I'm glad I was able to do that for him for the last time. And I know Micah will tell you he had a great time, because he told everybody he had a great time. But everything from, you know, the night he went to the Italian place and got a standing ovation in Cleveland. Do you remember that night, Micah?
Sure.
Yeah, so,
I know that. I mean, it
was just full of fans from the show, and when he came in, they all stood up and gave Dave and Micah a standing ovation at an Italian place in Cleveland. So.
Wow.
I know that I went to several different conventions and shows with Dave, and every time we ever went, he was absolutely amazed at the fans that he had, and that they were still lining up for hours on end. Dave never charged for an autograph. He never charged for a photograph.
Wouldn't.
He just wanted them to be happy just for a second. If they were meeting their hero or their, you know, their idol or whatever, he wanted it. He loved it. Yeah. He would share. He wouldn't brush them off.
I agree. I knew Dave for, like, I knew Herschel for 20 some years now. I knew him as a friend and a mentor. I mean, he was somebody who called me and in just talking taught me more than I'd ever learn if I sat in the classroom. And thanks to guys like Dave and Herschel, and I will give props to my friend Ted V. Michaels, that's why the Cinema Wasteland show exists. If it weren't for those three guys that always talked to me, I probably wouldn't have had the gumption to say, okay, I want to be a showman too.
Amen.
And,
yeah. Good deal. Yeah, I agree.
Well, that's what my show is to me. It's not a convention. It's not a gathering. I don't do it for the money. I have more fun presenting that show than I do attending someone else's convention. So, and it's thanks to these guys.
And you're
Thank you, Herschel, because of you, I make sure it's wonderful for you and everyone else because of you.
Head and shoulders up there. It's always a pleasure to be there.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm so glad we had you.
Well, I have to say, Herschel, I have to mirror Ken here for a second, because really, I was a young kid trying to make movies in the Midwest where they told me I couldn't make movies. They literally told me, you can't do it. And Herschel was a mentor to me as well. We spent many hours on the phone. We were trying to get some projects going together. I learned the hard way about the business, and I had a really unscrupulous producer that really messed me over, got me all excited about a project, and pulled the money out on me. And Herschel was so understanding and stood by my side on this and taught me so much that I continued. I was ready to quit at that moment, because I was like, if it's this hard, I don't know if I want to do it. But Herschel, he was there, and he taught me, and that's the thing. You know, you mentioned it was a different generation of filmmakers then, and they loved the craft. And Herschel, I owe it all to you. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't even be sitting in this chair today.
In that case, send me a check.
praise don't pay.
You know what?
I'll tell you one thing, though. Dave taught me one thing valuable, was the art of ballyhoo, to like put something over that could be the worst piece of crap in the world. And all
absolutely.
You had to do was make people believe it. Like, Dave could make people believe it, and they'd line up around the block for it.
His one phrase was, don't sell the steak, sell the sizzle.
Sell the sizzle, yeah. You know, as a businessman, the most valuable lesson Dave ever taught me was never take $100 from somebody when you can take 20 from them with a smile on their face and come back every year for 20 more.
Yep.
And yes, Dave always gave more than he took.
Yeah, I'll tell you a true story. I think, Ken, you might have been there for this. Chiller Theater did a convention down in Crystal City, Virginia.
I was there. I was
okay.
there. Yes, I was
okay.
There.
He tanked badly to the point where I think he was paying certain people to be there, and Dave was one of them. And I saw this with my own eyes. He turned over the check and pushed it in the back room and says, you took too much of a bath this weekend. Dave gave it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had the first table on the right of the door. He looked at me and he said, my God, how can you bomb on the first spot on the right? <You know? laughs> He said, that's the best spot in any building, the first spot on the right. How do you bomb here? And he wasn't charging anything, and he just didn't give anything away, or no one came by and talked to him at that show. That's what he meant.
God.
How do you bomb on the first spot on the right?
It was even more amazing, too, was when he came to Cleveland, and he sat down, and he started rattling some stuff off to me, and I'm like, I don't remember doing that, and now you're just reminding me I did do that, and I did work for General Cinema, and I completely forgot that. I mean, like I said, he could remember stuff about you that you would forget just by one conversation.
Herschel, were you trying
Dave
to...
Dave had a memory like a bear trap.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he did. He never forgot anything. We were on stage, and I asked him to tell a story he didn't want to tell, and you can tell he was like, nope, I'm not telling it, but I'll tell this one.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard to
that
say
was
there.
Funny.
It was impossible to be in a bad humor when he was around.
No, he
lifted everybody's spirit, no matter what was going on, no matter how bad the day might have been, whether it was shooting or exhibiting or just having conversations or running a show. You could not be in a bad humor when Dave was around. What a rare,
a
rare talent.
And no matter what your position was or is in life, Dave always spoke to everyone he met, whether it was the guy parking the cars or the president of a corporation. He spoke to everyone with the same amount of respect and dignity. No matter what you did, any work was noble work in his eyes.
Exactly. You're right. I was going to say there was no lowly job anywhere that Dave wouldn't have done or did himself, so he didn't look down on anyone.
Absolutely.
I agree.
You were mentioning his memory. I can't tell you how many times over the years I would mention a very specific movie theater, like on Long Island, that I would grow up at. And before I could even finish the sentence, Dave would tell me who the manager of the theater was and who booked the films there.
Sure. I'm aware.
Yep, yeah. You're talking about film theaters in the 60s. I'd bring up something like, oh, yeah, and you know, the Fine Arts Theater in Hempstead. He goes, oh, yeah, Louis something-something ran thing, the book was there, and he'd have a story about the place. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he'd do the same thing to me, Frank. He'd mention theaters in Cleveland, and I'd say, no, it's not there. He says, it's a shame. It was a beautiful place run by this guy. And
I remember that one day he and I were in Times Square, and I was taking him around for the day, and he wanted me to take him to a specific bar on a corner. And I didn't remember the bar, but I figured, okay, you know, if you know it there. Well, the reason I didn't remember it wasn't there. And it was the first time I ever saw him get really annoyed. He's going, oh, my God, what's wrong with this city? Then he says, I'll tell you another place. We went to another place, and that, too, was gone. And it was one of the few times I ever saw him absolutely disgusted. Like, he's standing there in the middle of Times Square in front of a Broadway theater, and he's very loud going, what are they doing to this place? What are they doing to this city?
Yeah, and being on the road with these films for so long, Dave knew every highway, county road, route there was in every state. And instead of looking on Google or MapQuest or whatever, if I was going somewhere, I'd call Dave. And I'd say, Dave, I'm going to such and such a place. And he'd go eat at this restaurant on this block on this day. It was great. He knew everywhere. He knew everywhere. I think at one time he told me he stepped foot on every continent except the two poles.
Wow.
It was just amazing to me that he did that. It was a can of film. You know, going and trading film with a Moen King that's in a grass skirt and a blazer, you know, in the 60s. Well, this is amazing things to me.
You have to remember, he grew up with the guys who threw film in the trunk of a car and were the original road showmen. So he learned from those guys how to do it.
That's right. I'll tell you, because of Herschel and Dave, I decided I had to go to St. Cloud, Florida. I was down there with my family. I'd go every winter to Orlando at New Year's time because I live in the Midwest and I can't stand the Midwest in the winter. It's awful. So I went down to Orlando there and I said, I'm going to St. Cloud. I'm going. And I went over there. I fell in love with the place. And now that's my dream place to move to. So I have to thank Herschel and Dave also for that because now they've introduced me to this place and I can't get out of my head.
Last time we were in Florida, we had to drive through too. Believe me and Tim.
I think I thank Walt Disney for not having absorbed St. Cloud into his empire. But we were there a few years ago, and that little old hotel is still sitting there just as it was when we shot 2000 Maniac.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's
wild.
Well,
you guys and Jimmy and everybody used it in your documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Used that same street, yeah.
Speaking of that documentary, I'm ready for that. When is that due to come out?
It's out.
Is it out?
Well, you know, it's actually playing this week in New York here.
Oh, awesome.
In fact, the Village Voice today gave a very nice, less of a review of the film than like the history of Herschel and Dave.
Wow.
And it's a very nice article on it where he really seemed to appreciate what those guys did. It was a very, very nice piece. And tomorrow they're playing the documentary with Blood Feast, and then on Friday night, I'm going to be there with Joe Bob Briggs.
Oh, yeah.
And they're showing the documentary with Scum of the Earth.
Oh, yeah.
And then on Saturday, they're showing it with Something Weird. And then on Sunday, I think it's back to Blood Feast. So it's pretty cool. And I heard that it's next going to be playing in Seattle at the, I forget the name of the theater, maybe The Illusionist, something like Dark Illusions or something like that. But it's playing in Seattle. I think in about 2 months they're going to play it for a week.
Wow. See, I live in the Midwest, so it takes forever to get anything around here. So I'm like, I go to the video store every week looking for it. So I'm glad to hear it's coming out.
Well, it's coming. It's also going to be released in September via Image Entertainment.
Oh,
we're
good.
Coming back on Image. And in fact, get this, we're going to put out, we're going to remaster the Blood Trilogy in HD.
Blu-ray.
And we're going to do a Blu-ray.
Yes!
Of Blood Feast, 2000 Maniacs, and Color Me Blood Red.
I'm there.
Hey, can somebody send me that review from Village Voice?
Sure.
I think they ought to retitle this thing, this documentary. the schlock that wouldn't die.
you know, Herschel, as Frank was rattling off dates there, somebody should call a certain producer director I know and see if they could team it up with a little film called The Uh-Oh Show.
Aha, yeah. I think that's a very good
See, I slid you right into that one.
You're good for that.
Okay, I owe you some money.
that's all right. The pennies between us.
I love this type of reunion, even though we're many miles apart. But we all share not just a love for our business, but the love for a guy who turned our business into a good time. And that's the wonderful, wonderful legacy that Dave has left.
You know, Herschel, you're absolutely right, and about the good time, it was also about, there was a lot of, you know, getting the joke. But let's not forget to get the joke while doing this.
You're right. Yeah.
And so many famous directors now who are trying to reproduce these Grindhouse movies, they do an excellent job, except they fail to get the joke. It's not funny. It doesn't look like it's fun for them to make. It doesn't translate over as to a good time just to, you know, watch it, let it wash over you, and be done with it. They're so serious.
One problem, Micah, is that their ego is on the line, and that never was the case with us. We simply said, let's see what we can do to get some bodies in the seats.
That's true. Yeah.
And it did.
You don't waste it when it's your money.
That's right.
And I always said, all these guys that are trying to recreate what they think is a Grindhouse film, they don't understand that the whole thing, it was an error, it was a mindset, it was a subculture. You're not going
to... Oh, yeah. They try to make it look like that, and they fall so flat. You know, we have a guy on the phone tonight who actually makes Grindhouse movies without trying, and that would be Frank. You've always made it. Well, Basket Case was a Grindhouse movie.
Yeah.
Left you and your love of them. So.
No, and the last one I made, I thought was a Grindhouse exploitation film.
It sure was.
It was. I would call every film you've ever done.
I'm ready for the Frankenhooker Blu-ray.
Yes, Micah.
That was great,
Well, you know.
And how long did Basket Case hold on at the Waverly? Like almost 2 years?
Oh, yeah.
2.5 years.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to say that last comment, Frank. I was like, thanks for the same, the humbleness that we're talking about Dave having. you have it too, my friend. You have it too.
I don't know. I have I cringe a lot at them. So, I don't exactly, I'm always apologetic about making them. So I don't know what to say.
Some of us you don't have to apologize to.
Well, I know. That's what's nice about you crazy guys.
Frank, in my estimation, you've never made a bad movie. I've always enjoyed your stuff.
Well, you haven't seen Basket Case 3 then.
I was heavily medicated. Basket Case 3 was fun. It had all the baby Belials. You can't go wrong when they're tiny.
Well,
as long as they're small, they're like as cute as kittens. So.
That should have been our tagline. You can't go wrong when they're tiny.
Oh yeah, they're as cute as kittens.
Oh my. Well, I do have to ask. I mentioned it a minute ago. I it was hard to hear, but I wanted to know. Now, Frank, are your plans for Blu-ray, are you going to put out Frankenhooker and some of that stuff on Blu-ray?
Well, other companies are. I only own the rights to Basket Case and half of Bad Biology.
Gotcha.
I don't own the rights to the others, but the last I heard, they want to do Frankenhooker on Blu-ray, and they've got great elements for that, so they can.
Awesome.
And the problem film was always Basket Case because I never revealed it because it's too stupid of me, but I lost the negative. I lost the original negative. And, I'm a guy who we've made money with something weird by finding other people's mistakes, and I lost the negative. Well, I never really lost it. I always had it mislabeled.
Oh.
And I found it a couple of years ago. And I found the 16mm camera original. It's the only one I ever shot in 16.
Wow.
So we're going to make a Blu-ray of that one, too, for this
Yay!
Year.
Awesome! That's good.
Congratulations.
It should look good for once. I never thought the film looked good at all. I thought it was a mess. I thought it looked horrible. But At least this is what this version will be what I photographed, so I can't complain anymore.
There you go. And speaking, you know, speaking of movies shot on a low budget, Herschel and Dave, the stuff they shot, and even Herschel's later movies, I hope to get all of those in this HD format, just because, like what you said, I want to see it the closest possible way to the way they intended it to be when they showed it in theaters. Because I didn't get to see Gruesome Twosome in a theater, and I love that movie.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, part of any problem is what elements survive. And we don't have the negatives to all of Herschel and Dave's films. We have some, we have mostly prints. So we're going to have to be careful about which ones we pick and choose. But our goal is, if we can keep churning out this stuff on Blu-ray, that would just be remarkable.
Oh, yeah. See, Herschel, all these years later, Herschel's stuff is still alive.
Are we going to see the Blood Trilogy in 3D glasses?
Oh, wouldn't you love it?
No, we didn't have that kind of budget. It was all 1.5D.
filmed in single dimension.
Right.
I have to sign off here, but it's really been a pleasure. And I am grateful to you guys for putting this together.
Well, thank you, Herschel.
I love you all.
Herschel, it was great having you on. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming on.
Nice talking to you, Herschel. You take care. Tell Margo Ken says hi.
I will tell Margo.
Good night, Herschel. Good night.
We love you, buddy.
Bye, Herschel, baby.
You are seeing scenes from the next motion picture to play this theater. A motion picture in which you dare not become too involved. You must keep reminding yourself, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. It's just a movie. It is not for the eyes and ears of anyone under 16 years of age. Color me blood red. Fiendish is the word for it. Color me blood red. This is Adam, and this is a story of Adam and evil. This is a film drenched in crimson, a blood-spattered study in the macabre. Color me blood red. You must keep reminding yourself, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. It's just a movie. Color me blood red. It will leave you aghast. Color me blood red. Color me blood red.
Attention all personnel. You got it. You got it. You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
Whenever Dave was around Herschel, I could see him relax a little more than he would with someone else.
Yeah.
When Dave was with Herschel, I got to see the kid in Dave a little more. More of the loose talk and the free association he would have back and forth with Herschel. It was wonderful just to be in a car with the both of them, just anywhere, watching these two humans on this planet interact with each other. It was great. I just loved it. I loved seeing Dave be a kid again around Herschel.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Dave was always playful. What story you were talking about, his sense of humor, and I'll never forget when he was his eyesight, he still had it, and he was complaining about it to me. You know, and he held up a dollar and said, now I have to hold it out this far to read it. And I gave him my book, the Youth in Babylon book, and said, hey, buddy, I picked one of these up. Will you sign it for me? He flipped it upside down, signed it to Ken, I love you, blah, 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 and handed it back to me, went, did I notice it was upside down when I signed it? But he did it on purpose. It had the dust jacket and everything on it. I was like, so I'll never forget that. It's still sitting on my library. Anybody wants to come and look at the upside down Dave signature and come see it.
Yeah, he signed
mine. I was like,
He signed mine to a fellow purveyor of forbidden delights.
That's funny. That is so funny.
And it's not upside down, though, right?
No.
No, it's right side up. Last time I saw it, I'm upside down half the time.
On my Blood Feast, on that book he gave me, the Blood Feast book, he signed it to someone with who I really like but has no taste.
Is your Blood Feast book paperback?
Yeah, it's a paperback. Remember those?
This is not an original that Herschel put out.
Do you need one, Mike?
That's impossible to find. I've only seen two of them.
I know John Waters, he owns one or two.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a Blunt Feast original from the 60s. I've seen two of them in my life.
So. Well, you can buy one on Amazon, I think, for $99 right now.
I think I had a couple of each of them. I just don't know where I put them.
Yeah.
Well, remember, Fanico released it in the 90s with the little...
Yeah, no, I'm talking the original.
The color, these are the 60s, paperbacks.
Herschel's not listed as the author of the original.
Right.
It's some other name
correct.
On there.
Yeah, there's somebody else's name.
That's the film. That's what really got me into Herschel and Dave way back when, was that damn paperback. Because it was at a... I grew up in a small town on Long Island, Lynbrook, and, there was a family pharmacy. I think it was a Whalen's, a family pharmacy on the corner. And they had, paperback books. And they had one rack that had adult-oriented books. And, of course, that was the one I always gravitated to just to look at the covers. And I always was fascinated by the covers. I was so impressionable that just a drawing of a semi-naked girl, and I was ready to pass out, So I saw Blood Feast, and they had those little tiny photos on the corner. And I remember picking it up, and it was the photos that did it to me. I was so shocked at it. And, when you're a little a kid, you love that stuff. Little boys love blood and gore, And I was so taken by this, and I used to go in that damn store like once a week and open up the book. I couldn't have bought it. It said adults only on it. So I would just go there every week, once a week, and I'd open it up and look at it, and I'd put it back behind one because I didn't want anybody buying it, And eventually it was gone, but that made such an impact on me that that's what made me seek out, what is that film and who made it? And I remember actually being disappointed when I finally saw Blood Feast and saw that it was in color. Because all these pictures were black and white. And I thought the black and white was far more disgusting. I thought the color was actually rather playful.
Yeah. Did you see it in the theater originally?
Yeah. Oh, no, not originally. Oh, God, no. I wish I had.
Yeah,
no,
me
no,
too.
No.
I was on the no-no list when I was in school. But we're the same age, so yeah, you went through the same shit.
Yeah, no, this was, in fact, the only theater I was aware of it playing on Long Island was a theater that just played adults-only movies, and it played with, of all things, The Sadist.
I always heard about Blood Feast, right? So somebody had a bootleg tape of it. This is like when VHS first started.
Yeah.
And, prior to this, all the other gore stuff came out. Like, we had never seen this, right? We had a card game. We were laughing so hard at this thing. Because it was that dated, and it was so funny. Like the one when the chick's all bandaged up, she's going, "Oh, it was," and then the fucking thing goes beep and shit. We were cracking up.
Yeah.
That's I got to tell you guys, another rare thing I got was the Blood Feast 2000 Maniacs LP. I walked in a used record store here in town, and they had one. It had never been opened. Someone had brought in, and I was lucky enough to snag
one.
That.
75 cents, buddy.
There you go.
I've got a rare Blood Feast item that probably you don't have.
What's that?
Huh. I have print number 8.
There you go. Jeez.
Oh, do you? There you go. Yep. How many prints were made?
I don't know, but it's completely beat red. I mean, it looks like it's been through the shredder, but there's not a trace of color left in it. It's all red and pink and maroon. That's it. That's it,
Wow.
But print number 8 is down in my mother's basement on Long Island.
That's okay. It's still
safe. Yeah,
print number 8.
I'm glad I have it. I just feel comfortable knowing I've got it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting here in the man's house carrying on his estate, and I'm starting to get jealous of these items.
Well, we're not giving them up either.
We'll trade you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I might trade you.
Maybe we can do some permanent loans between each other.
I don't know. I own the 2000 Maniacs and Color Me Blood Red books. And literally, the price on them is like 65 cents. That's all they ever cost me. So,
and how many pages?
I'm not giving them
a paperback. I mean, is it like 89 pages to read Blood Feast? I'm curious.
No, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's 100-some pages of you know, not really tiny type. Well,
yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a long script.
It was a pretty big type, yeah.
Big block letters.
You know, it was so funny. I was born in 1977. By the time I was by the time I was old enough to know what my great uncle, my mother's uncle-in-law, was doing, it was just, oh yeah, Dave makes movies. Well, I never thought anything about it until you come of age. And then when sex, drugs, and rock and roll hit you in a small town in Alabama, you go, oh my God, Uncle Dave does what? The first time I ever saw Dave's movies was with him somewhere. Somebody was showing
them. Yeah. Absolutely.
There just wasn't availability of DVDs, VHSs of these movies.
Uh-huh.
It just didn't happen for me like that. Like, you kind of, like, I hear these stories about everybody kind of, they grew up with these. I was way older and, like, had no idea about Uncle Dave and what he did. And I knew we brought the carnival into town. That was great. I was 11. He moved back to Anniston in 1988. I was 11 years old. So my memories of Carol and Dave are definitely on the fairgrounds, the carnival, here in town and other places.
Yeah.
It was
I'd like to tell you that that's the way he wants you to remember him. That's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'd like to say it now while I have a quiet time, but as long as somebody remembers you, you're never dead. And I don't
think
I'm going to go to my grave and not have memories of Dave Friedman. And you can't call him David Friedman unless you're signing his damn check, because he got irritated.
Never David.
He did not like
David.
If you call him David Friedman, he'd be like, you know, is there someone else here with my name or what? You know, so... But that's the way I feel about anyone. They're never dead. They're never gone as long as somebody remembers them. And everybody on the phone right now is not going to forget the man. We met him. We knew him.
You know, he thought he was forgotten when Mike Rennie.
Oh, absolutely.
Mike Rennie first contacted him, Dave had already started disposing of his material. He didn't throw out.
Frank, you know, me and Mike, we kind of met Dave around the same time ago, 20 years or so ago.
Yeah.
And I never thought of it, or I could have been to something weird, and I'm glad Mike did, because I knew Jimmy Maslin, too, and we talked, and, you know, and that's how I got to know some of these guys. And, you know, and it's like, you know, I look at me and Mike and our you know, us growing up, we're about the same age and we mirrored each other as fans. But I think it's great that I never thought of it. I just wanted to talk to the guy.
You know, he thought Mike was crazy and he kept saying,
yes, he did. Yeah,
what are you doing?
Initially, my recollection, when Dave found out about this, he was extremely pissed off that someone was doing
this.
And
immediately
wanted to meet this man. You know, And the way Dave would tell it sometimes to me would be, you know, I want to meet this guy and see if I can tell him to do it the right way or not. And
oh, talking about Mike?
Wisely listened and did it the right way.
Well, you know, what's funny is that so Dave got mad at him, and by the time he passed away, his kids called him Grandpa, you know? That's the kind of guy Dave was. He was mad, yes, but, you know, he was mad for all the right reasons. Like, damn it, man, if you're going to sell them, learn to sell them.
Well, you know, the thing was, too, he got on the phone a little angry, but he got off the phone thinking, you know, this could be a lot of fun.
And he really
took a liking to Verini very, very fast. And then when the first couple of Friedman titles was released, and Dave got a check, and so they were selling, he took Dave down to Cordova Street, opened the vault, and basically said, take what you want.
Yeah, take it out of here.
And
I'm tired of paying the rent on it. Yeah, I know that.
And then any time we were trying to track something down, the fact that Dave was a part of this company, I'll tell you, they were, you sell Dave stuff? Okay, you can have mine. No problem. Good. Say hi to him for me. That's what we heard over and over and over again.
Yep. That was wonderful.
That cleaned up Verini's act. He suddenly purged everything in his company of bootlegs. Because he thought...
Oh, exactly.
It was overnight. It was overnight. It was like, okay, I'm gonna handle this. I'm gonna do Dave stuff, and I'm gonna do it legitimately, and that's that. And so he made an honest man out of Dave, out of Mike, overnight.
Yeah, overnight. Well, I mean, Herschel's not on the phone right now to collaborate this story, but I'll never forget I met Dave first. And for some odd reason, he goes, well, it might have been, and for the first time ever, I think the only time ever, Dave didn't quite know the answer, and he tells me, he goes, call Hirsch, and rattled off a number. Well, he gave me Herschel's home phone number, not his office or anything, so I call him, and I ask for him, and he was like, where did you get this number? And I'm like, Dave Friedman gave it to me. Blammo. Okay, everything was fine, and I've known Herschel for 20 years since, you know? But it was like, how did you get this number, young man? I have an office. So, it was a great meeting.
I was once an Argentinian magazine named Macosa. We were doing an article on the movie Snuff because it was allegedly shot in Argentina. You know that. So
the original film was. Anyway.
Yeah, well, they asked me if I would participate in it and do a little sidebar article on it. And I did because I remember those days when I used to search for a real snuff movie in 42nd Street, okay? And I never thought they existed. I thought it was all phony as hell. But I called up Dave and I said, listen, Dave, I'm writing this article. I think snuff movies are totally phony and bogus. What do you think? Well, he didn't think. He told me the entire history of them. He said, you got a pen and paper ready? Here goes. And man, it was, the whole thing came out, every little detail, names, dates, places, how it started, where it went,
Frank, I have one question.
Yeah.
Do they exist?
No.
Exactly. That's what we all knew that. But I'm,
yeah. No. And I mean, it was actually a conspiracy by a Catholic organization who was, they were trying to, equate, well, if we let, if there's hardcore sex on the screen, what's next? Murder? Well, why would anybody equate sex and murder in the same sentence unless you're some, crazy Christian somewhere, I guess. I don't know.
You don't know my ex.
We'll be right back.
He was born on the day of the great fire cloud over the desert. All he wanted was a place in the new age. But they still believe the only good Indian is a dead Indian.
Think the old chief's any good?
He's an Indian, ain't he, Ned?
It was now. Redskins no longer bit the dust. They just ate dirt.
You hassle every Indian on this road?
Nope.
They pushed and shoved, squeezed and leaned harder. Until they bought themselves an all-American one-man Indian massacre.
Oh! Johnny, come back! I didn't do it, Johnny!
And then they knew what the word savage really meant. He made some points for himself in their army, but not enough to live next door.
You're not in the army anymore. Now you're just another Indian.
Or marry the mother of his child.
Let's get married, Johnny.
You can't.
Johnny Firecloud. A hate story.
I need Firecloud. You're going to get him. You're going to get him or you're going to kill him. Or he's going to kill you.
It don't make a damn bit of difference to you either way.
Starring Victor Mojica, Ralph Meeker, David Canary, Frank DeCova, Christina Hart, Sasheen Littlefeather. Johnny Firecloud. Filmed in Panavision. Rated R. From EVI.
Attention all personnel. You got it. You got it. You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
If it wasn't sold on 42nd Street, it wouldn't be sold anywhere. The only purpose of making a film like that would be to sell it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't there. Yeah.
I'll tell you exactly where the place was. It was Crossroad Books.
But it was, on 42nd?
Yeah, it was on the island between 42nd and...
yeah, but it also spread to Blackjack's, and it also spread to the one way down the street, that further west. So it was three places that had them.
Yeah.
You know, but it started at that one and then moved to Blackjack's had it, and then I forget what the other one was. It was a much larger place in it. But you know, my point was not whether they were real or not, but I wanted Dave's opinion, and what he told me was the entire history of it, which had never been printed before. And, I mean, that was that article I did. Yeah, that article I did is actually from the mouth of Dave, and you know, it was like, well, here's the truth. Boom, there it is.
Yeah.
And like I said, he knew it because they were a come-on.
He laughed. He said to me, what is my opinion? He says, you want to know the truth? And I said, yeah. And he says, you got a pen? I said, here he goes. Here goes. Ready?
from the mouth of David S. Friedman here in Alabama, I'm going to have to say that nothing but good can now be said about Dave. And that makes me sleep well at night. And I'd also like to say, Dave would always say, may you sleep the sleep of the innocent and the just tonight in the arms of Morpheus. So good night to everyone.
Well, good. And I just want to, you know, say again, Pete. Micah, thank you for what you did for him. You were really, somebody special. And I really felt good that last visit down there, seeing how you were caring for him and everything. It was just... it made me feel very comfortable that I knew he was in wonderful, wonderful hands.
Well, thank you. It came very easy for me to care for someone as wonderful as him and all that he's done for me, not only working for family, but just getting to know him as a person. It was my pleasure and my honor to meet all of you guys and hugs and kisses. And
look.
Oh, I just love you guys. And please keep in touch. Dave, you know,
likewise, Micah.
Yeah, I've got Dave's little black book, and
we're in there, yeah. And
it can't be that little if it was Dave's black book.
It's a wonderful black book. It has this little tag that's been on here. I can tell for years. The pages are yellowed. His handwriting is perfect in it, and there's this large tag on the front that says, generous reward is found and returned to David F. Friedman. Give the address.
That's awesome.
Well, I think I told you this, Micah, when I last spoke to you, but when we were down there last year to film the documentary, we were going to call it back then, That's Sexploitation. But as soon as we came back, within a month of coming back, we had already changed the title to David F. Friedman's That's Sexploitation. And that's going to be the new title, that one, you know.
You did.
Because everything we learned, he taught us, so that's the way it should be.
Thank you so much.
Listen and learn. Listen and learn, kids.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I don't want to cry, but thank you.
Oh, you're allowed.
Well,
I didn't talk to Dave for the last 10 years without him mentioning your name. So,
oh God, constantly,
Micah. So you go ahead and feel as wonderful and warm as you want to right now.
Yep.
Right. Well, I can't take all the credit. Everyone.
Well, you know, we're all just thanking you. That's what we're doing right now.
I appreciate it so much, you guys. I really do. It was a pleasure, and I have so many stories to talk about in person and not on the radio.
There you go. There you go.
Hey, well, thank you. My show's always
open.
Come
up to Cleveland again and enjoy the Wasteland Show one of these days.
You know, because I am craving. I keep seeing on the Food Network, Cleveland, this food. I got to come up here and start eating more food out of Cleveland.
I can show you where to eat. I'm half a Southern boy, and I know where to eat in Cleveland, so I can take a Southern girl there.
Carrying on Dave's legacy is making sure you eat well, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And always have a couple of drinks with your meals. Unfortunately, I don't do the cigar.
Dave, I've sat at dinner tables, lunch tables, and breakfast tables for hours on end. He loved to dine. He truly loved to dine.
Yes, he did.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy your night. Thank you, Pete. Oh,
my pleasure.
Luck. And Frank,
want you to come back on again.
Too.
Yep.
Take care.
All right. Be well.
Absolutely. We can
be
have
well.
Friday night from Dave's office.
There you go. There you go. Very cool.
Hey, don't be surprised if me and Pete show up with a video camera one of these days.
That's right.
Hey, we should get her at the Wasteland. Just let her and me do a panel.
Yeah, that's a
there's your thought.
True.
All right. Well, ciao for now.
Take care.
Take good care.
Hey, thanks again.
Au revoir. Auf Wiedersehen. Good night.
Good night.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Before it gets to the end of the show, Frank, you've been a major influence on me in my entertainment career, and also
that means you'll never make any money in the business.
That's probably true, but I'll be much happier because I've got you to look up to. So,
we could let people know what's going on in October if you want, Frank, or show
that
we
what?
What's going on this this fall if you'd like.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We can announce now that Frank will be a guest at the next.
Well, I've been saying that on my Facebook page for the past 6 months.
Oh,
they never told you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? You know what it is. Everybody keeps. I keep getting offered. Oh, when are you going to come to this place? When are you going to come to this? And I said to them, look, I'm busy this year. I'm doing a documentary. I have to get this thing finished by the fall, and then I'm going to go to Cinema Wasteland. It's the only one I'm going to do.
A lot of great memories, and I really think a really fitting tribute to the man, the legend, and somebody none of us will ever forget, and the fans will never forget, Dave Freeman.
I would say the only closing thought is I'm glad I was able to meet the man. I was glad I was able to get to know the man, and I was glad I was able to give him his last convention experience.
He really was a living legend, or gets used, gets abused.
Yeah, it gets bantered around so poorly now.
Yeah,
he really was.
Sitting there with those $1,000 hand card games with all the old timers.
And a cigar in his mouth.
Carol never made him quit where he's at right now. He's stuffing away. So I'll never forget when he did quit, and then Carol passed away, and he looked at me and he goes, you know, I just can't put one of these back in my mouth since she finally got me to stop. So she did him a great service there. And I think I'd have to say in closing that my life is better in knowing him.
Yep, you're here.
Wow, awesome.
All I can say is I agree, and I thank you guys for coming on. And until next week.
Stay sick. Always fun.
Come on, here we go again, motherfucker, yeah. Come on down and see the idiot right here, too fucked to beg and not afraid to care. What's the matter with calamity anyway? Right, get the fuck out of my face. Understand I can't feel anything, it isn't like I want to sift through the decay. I feel like a wound, like I got a fucking gun against my head. You live when I'm dead. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. Come on. Me now, so fuck it. Blood on my face and my hands, I don't know why. I'm not afraid to cry, but that is none of your business. Overdo it, don't tell me you blew it. Stop your bitching and fight your way through it. I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit.
What you gotta do?
People equal shit.
I'm not afraid of you.
People equal shit.
Everything you'll ever be.
People equal shit.